This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Brian Koberger is spending the rest of his life behind bars, but we are now finally just beginning to get a look at what was going on in the investigation into him over the last 3 years, and many new pieces, new details are coming to light, helping us better understand exactly what was going on behind the scenes. Here to help us break it all down, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. I know you've been perusing through these documents, and there's a lot of them to get through. Let's just start there. I want to start where your mind takes you. What was one of the pieces you wanted to go to immediately and find more information about now that these have been released?
Well, the first thing I wanted to see was confirmation on the order in which the students were killed.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems very clear, as we all thought from what we knew previously, that Maddie was killed first, followed by Kaylee, and then Zanna, and then Ethan. And then also to understand the details of those killings. Was one more vicious than the other? Just trying to determine, of course, targeting and things like that, his reason. So that was one item. The other item, which unfortunately to me has ended up being a big goose egg, is the digital footprint. And apparently he erased a great deal of everything. So we're just not going to get to know, unfortunately. And that's a big problem, not getting his search history, not seeing different, items he might have done on his computer and what he was researching. So unfortunately, his digital footprint is not a good one.
Is that because he went through and he deleted things? I mean, can we tell if things were deleted? Do we know if things were deleted? Or was he just not that, I guess, digital of a digger when it came to stalking his prey?
No, I think it was there. Apparently, he went to great lengths to make sure it would be erased and not found through other apps and things. We're still trying to get to the bottom of it, but from the interview with a ISP detective, we know now he wiped everything. So really, we don't know what we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, were there those contacts? I tell you, right after it broke that he was arrested, Tony,
mm-hmm.
I personally went and looked on Instagram and others, and I saw a connect. And the Consolvitz family did too. Law enforcement is saying there was not one. And when I say I saw a connect, I don't mean that they followed one another.
Mm-hmm.
I just mean that he attempted, I believe, to follow Kaylee and Maddie, if I recall correctly. I'd have to look back at that particular post. But Tony, it's all erased.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we're going to be able to even look at his search history or anything. It sounds like it's gone.
And that's, I mean, that's one of those things in this case that kind of bothers me is, okay, it's gone, but is that where the trail ends? Just like Papa Roger, where I know they said, it's not him, that wasn't him. I question that. And I question, did they dig deep enough to really get the answers they're looking for digitally here? I mean, maybe the answer simply is, it's gone, but I mean, is there any place these sort of things can be found? Because, again, Papa Roger doesn't give me a lot of faith in this, that it went and dug deep enough into the identity of him or some of this other information digitally.
I know. It's disconcerting because we thought we were going to see so many answers.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, we seem to have the exact same questions.
Yeah.
Some of the questions have been answered. Now we know the brutality. For the first time, I saw that Maddie Mogan had defensive wounds. They mm-hmm. described wounds on her forearm. They described wounds on her hands. Those are usually indicative of defensive wounds, which we've never known. I never knew she had a big mark as if she was struck or somewhere way brutalized from the nose clear over to the end of her eye. We never knew about that. The gag marks, 20 plus stab wounds for Kaylee. Ethan, his jugular cut, his mm-hmm. subclavian artery and vein cut. I mean, I don't even know if you want me to say, but basically his head lodged between the bed and the wall, Tony. Yeah. I mean, it's just, when I read these horrific, horrific details, we knew it was bad.
Yeah.
It's honestly worse than I thought.
It is. And it makes it all the more, I would say intriguing, but all the more questionable. How the hell did Brian Koberger not sustain any injuries in committing this crime and get out of there as cleanly as he apparently did? Or did he? Or are we learning more about maybe it wasn't quite as clean as we thought it was?
Well, if you look at that picture when he's in the white button-up shirt, the happy picture, he, right out, you know, in the morning, right after these crimes were committed, you can see definitely some bruising, it looks like to me, on his hand.
Yeah.
Pointed that out early.
Mm-hmm.
There was a huge, huge struggle that took place, but I do believe he was very well. His hands were appropriately, you know, had covering on them, his body. So that always would help. And I always say this, I mean, if you go in with a maniacal rage of a possible serial killer, certainly a mass murderer with a K-bar, with people who are sleeping,
mm-hmm.
You're going to have the upper hand even when they wake up.
Sure.
So he had what we use in law enforcement, speed, surprise, violence of action. He had all of it.
Mm-hmm.
They had no chance. And so, Tony, but the questions that I think were frustrated that weren't answered are because his digital footprint has largely been erased.
Mm-hmm. And that's a question. I mean, so much is found in a digital footprint today. And with that being gone, it just leaves many, many questions. Are you surprised that there, at what was found in his apartment, meaning not a lot? I guess I was expecting maybe more digital, or not even necessarily digital, but certainly digital, more pieces of evidence there, or maybe there is, but just wasn't necessarily conclusive to the investigation itself.
Well, you know, after they conducted those four search warrants of his car, his office, the house in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and his apartment in Pullman, when we went over those in a lot of detail, Tony, mm-hmm. and there wasn't a lot there. And I think that, of course, was by purpose.
Mm-hmm.
He was a smart guy. You know, people don't like, I guess people don't like to refer to him as smart, but he mm-hmm. was. And I will forever maintain, I don't know if he would have been convicted without the DNA. Would he have been arrested? Would they have known it was him? They may have arrested him just to get him off the streets and try to charge him with something.
Mm-hmm.
But that's without that DNA, Tony, I just don't know if there would have been a case. Now for instance, that the DoorDash driver, Tony.
Yeah.
The DoorDash driver didn't really see him.
Yeah, that's another interesting part of this whole thing. We recently, in the last couple of months before all this happened, before he pled, the DoorDash driver, that video came out of her talking with the law enforcement officer after she was pulled over. They thought it was a DUI. It wasn't. She was taking a prescription medication that she was entitled to take. But she had mentioned in that interview that she had seen Koberger. And everyone was like, whoa, that would not have been a good witness on the stand had this come to fruition, correct?
Yeah, it doesn't look good. I mean, she had a bad view. It was really foggy. The description is not good. When I say foggy, not in terms of foggy outside, mm-hmm. her foggy explanation of exactly what she saw, which makes a lot of sense, Tony. First of all, she's a DoorDash driver on the mission of dropping a package.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you might notice people in passing, especially at that hour, but nobody knew the critical nature of Brian Koberger being there, the white Elantra. And so for her to have sort of a cloudy take on what she actually saw makes actually a lot of sense, meaning I think she was being truthful when she was interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
What it seems she was exaggerating, though, was when she was in that arrest scenario, sort of exaggerating mm-hmm. her role in the situation.
And that's a scary thing, because if we had her on the stand and it's exaggerated, or if she believes what she's exaggerated, because people do that, time goes on, stories start changing a little bit. It's kind of human nature of how we are. I'm not saying she's trying to be untruthful or anything, but that could have backfired spectacularly and created reasonable doubt. So it's a good thing that it is, I guess, ended the way it did, because that would not have been a good look for trying to prosecute Brian Koberger. What other pieces of evidence that you've seen come out, other pieces from the police reports that have stood out to you so far?
Well, you know, a big question a lot of people had was that really blood going down the side of the house? A lot of people said, no, that's HVAC rust or other things. Most of us believed it was blood. It was blood. Oh, and it was, you know, that information came forth, and then whose blood it was. It was Ethan's. Mm-hmm. So just horrible, these horrible details that I think people just wondered about for the last 2.5 years. You know, give us the whole story, the whole outline of the investigation. And so I think many of us are just trying to take a look at this puzzle, and we just want the whole puzzle put together.
There was also reporting early on, I believe it was in one of the affidavits, of when they went through Koberger's house, they took his mattress, and people had seen some of that as it was being excavated out of the house. There was some stains on it. There was speculation, is that blood on that mattress? There was hairs identified, even pet hairs identified. Did we ever get any clarity on what any of that was?
I still have not seen the clarity on that. I did see very recently the shovel address. Mm-hmm. So his Elantra was searched in Pennsylvania, and in there was a shovel. And there wasn't much detail about that shovel, by the way, whether it was a spade shovel. Mm-hmm. This was something we discussed ad nauseum when it first happened, but we didn't have a lot of information. Now we know at least that this shovel had dirt in and around it. So I don't believe it was a snow shovel. At the time, I didn't believe it was a snow shovel. Who makes a cross-country trip on a highway and brings their snow shovel?
If you're from the north, I would say in Wisconsin, I traveled with a snow shovel in the back of my truck. It wasn't a digging dirt shovel. It's not something we're going to have dirt on. But I traveled with a snow shovel up north, because there's times where it's extremely snowy and you can get stuck on the side of the road. So I wouldn't say that that's completely odd or out of the question for that portion of the country. But the type of shovel is important. If it's a dig and dirt shovel, like for the garden, that's a big difference. And if there's dirt on it, that would lead one to question, well, is that where the murder weapon is?
That's exactly right. I mean, my view has always been from the beginning that he buried the knife and the clothing. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I thought he would do that, and many people disagree with me. Many people say, no, he threw that in that river. He threw it, you know. I think he would have wanted to keep it to go back to remind him of everything. That's what I think. And now, hearing the new information, it sounds like the FBI thought that that might be the case, because they were sending off soil samples, not only of the soil that was collected from the shovel, but comparing it against multiple places. Mm-hmm. And so they clearly were concerned that that was the reason he had that shovel to go cross country with him. I've never used a snow shovel, and I grew up in the north too.
Yeah.
Never used a snow shovel to dig a hole.
You got lucky. Were people helping you dig stuff? Were you?
No, I meant to dig a hole.
Oh, okay. Not to dig a hole. Yeah, I was going to say, you didn't shovel any snow in the north?
Oh, no. I shoveled snow all the time.
Okay.
No, I just meant to dig a hole.
Sure.
I never got my snow shovel and said, geez, I'm going to go dig something in the garden.
Yeah. I don't know how you'd do that, but yes. Okay.
No.
I was going to say, I know you're you were lucky. You were one of the lucky ones. Let me shovel that snow for you, Jennifer. I totally hear you on that. What makes me want, okay, so they're looking in, or they did look into soil samples, trying to determine, okay, geographically, where might this have come from? What I'm also wondering about is cell phone history. I would imagine that that could be looked into as well to see where he pinged after the fact and to see areas that maybe he went to dispose of any of this. Was any of that revealed in any of these documents?
Yeah, certainly they talk about that, that mm-hmm. that's what helped them know which soil samples to collect mm-hmm. based on his digital footprint from a cellular standpoint, where mm-hmm. that was. But I mean, talk about a needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
I always try to tell people in these missing cases, you know, when people are looking for people or these fugitives that are in the mountains, I want you to take the smallest of a round ball, even a marble, and hide it somewhere in your house and have your whole family look for it. If you hide it pretty well, they're not going to find it for weeks, months, if they ever find it. Mm-hmm. It's so hard. And that really doesn't even equate as it would to these parks that they're trying to look for some hole he might have dug. I mean, it was a needle in the haystack, but I thought it was terrific that they at least tried mm-hmm. to go down every path to find that knife.
And in the end, obviously, it's not needed. He's in prison now for the rest of his life. Is this now a moot point? Is there going to be any more searching for this other than from true crimers with metal detectors?
Well, true crimers, now that they've already stated, really, they listed out the places that they were looking. Mm-hmm. So you can bet YouTubers, if that's what I did for a full-time job, mm-hmm. I would be out there hunting and looking, and you never know. But, you know, I've always believed that the only way they're going to find it is one of two ways. Some hunter or somebody, if it is indeed buried, some hunter or somebody mm-hmm. out there that happens to stumble upon a dig site like that, mm-hmm. or the other option would be him saying yeah. where it is. And I still think that that's a possibility down yeah. the line.
That is an interesting question. I saw Howard Bloom posted about it this morning, something to the effect of how long before Brian Koberger starts taunting us from behind bars as to where the knife is buried, or maybe the clothing if he had other things on that night. And it does make you wonder. It does make you start to wonder more as we ponder what the existence of Koberger is going to be like in prison. Is he going to continue to try and emulate other killers like BTK or insert other serial killer here, which he seems to have a penchant for doing, to try and keep himself relevant? Do you think we're going to see that with Koberger?
I think we will. It's going to take time. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably already has a plan, mm-hmm. Maybe even knows who he wants to meet with. Yeah, I do remain hopeful that he might want to meet with FBI BAU, the Behavioral Analysis Unit agents, profilers, if you will. Mm-hmm. I do hope that he does that just because he'll want to be more infamous, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to want to be in the annals like mm-hmm. Bundy and BTK and all the rest of them. So I think he, you know, it'll be interesting what route he chooses. Will he go Catherine Ramsland mm-hmm. or will he go with a Dateline or will he go with a law enforcement type? Somewhere deep down, I believe when he decides to, spill the tea that it will be to law enforcement, I'm at least hopeful.
Is there a lot to be learned from Brian Koberger, I guess is the question, because it does seem he fumbled this thing up pretty well. The killers we're talking about there, Bundy, BTK, you name them, they had reps. They had a track record. They were able to get away with their crimes many, many times over before actually being caught, some for decades. Koberger screwed up on his first attempt, as far as we know, this being his first attempt. And as far as what we're learning more and more of, there were a lot of dropping the balls here. Obviously, horrible, horrible crime. The tragedy of these four young lives being lost. That's the shocking, rough, absolutely disturbing part of all this. But at the end of the day, was this a really genius killer that is to be that does deserve that sort of attention, or that anything can honestly really be gleaned out of, other than this is a mentally deficient human being that somehow found this to be a great idea and even screwed that up?
Well, I think two things. First of all, I don't think anything coming out of his mouth could ever be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
Because the statements made by people like that are so self-serving, because in the end, he's going to want everybody to still think he's smart and mm-hmm. he's an amazing human and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So that's the difficult part, that even if he does interview, it's on his terms. And, you know, are we really going to believe him?
Yeah.
But to your other point, is he even worth it?
Yeah.
I think he is worth it because he planned this forever. Mm-hmm. And did he do any other burglaries? We know he didn't do any other murders, but mm-hmm. did he do any burglary type? What all did he do in preparation for this? You know, Ted Bundy was a prolific burglar,
mm-hmm.
peeper, stalker, if you will. I call it surveillance type. Before he ever committed his murders, I agree with you. They did murders, so many more, and for such a long time to be so prolific. But he was really, I think, one in the making. And he's going to be around probably 50 years. He's so young.
Yeah, he definitely is. When we're talking about profiling, we're talking about some of the behavior prior to the crime. There's a lot of things that have come out there, but we don't necessarily know if it was him. One, considering we know what actually took place eventually, one would lead one to think possibly it's him, talking about the house itself, the door tampering, the girls feeling uncomfortable, some of them spotting people off in the distance, watching them. Do you think that that was Koberger that was involved in any of those incidents pre the murders taking place?
I think it really is possible. I don't know about the door being ajar.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like, look, not seemed like, we know people were going in and out of that house often.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on weeknights and things. And, you know, I'll never forget that scene where the house is packed with people and not one person who lived there was there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, party central. So I'm not sure about the door being ajar, but I tell you, that spooky description of somebody watching, you know, them looking over it. For those of you who haven't seen that house, it's got woods around it.
Yeah.
You know, a tree line, where somebody could easily go. And we need to remember, Koberger was a runner, not mm-hmm. just I think I'm going to go out and recreationally run.
Mm-hmm.
He was down to 6 minute miles. And for those of us who run, that is a very healthy clip. So he could have even gone, parked further away, left his car further away, and ran and be that person that was on foot watching from afar. That would not surprise me at all and makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, not at all. It does make you wonder if we're going to hear more reporting or any other folks coming out going, oh, yeah, I remember him running through town or seeing him in odd places running. It's like, oh, he's just a runner, maybe. Or is there something else going on here? When we're looking at other aspects of this case or retrospectively looking at some of this now that obviously we were getting more answers to. What else has stood out to you as some pieces that you wanted answers to that maybe now we have gotten? And are you happy with those answers that have been revealed?
Well, I have to tell you, Tony, I'm disappointed. I'm mm-hmm. disappointed that we don't know more. I mean, a lot of what's being revealed are, you know, just shows the work they put in,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily results,
yeah,
which is often what happens. For instance, we're getting to see Jack Showalter, who a lot of people thought early on that he, you know, was somehow involved in this crime. And so we're getting to see the steps that law enforcement took,
mm-hmm.
The search warrant that was done to, you know, try to see if he had anything to do with this. Of course, he was exonerated very early on. It was found that he had nothing to do with this crime. And they actually did a list, and he was on it saying, this is not a subject anymore. We've run down those leads. So we're getting to see that. And I think it's important for citizens to see that that's what happens. You start small and then you work out, but you have to very diligently investigate all the inner circle. Mm-hmm. And they did that, and we're getting to see that. What's irritating, Tony, is watching people say, see, even law enforcement was looking into him. Mm-hmm. You know, see, he's involved. I mean, you literally, it's like the Twilight Zone. Yeah, people starting like it's 2.5 years ago in November. Mm-hmm. See, it was Showalter. See, it was Dylan. See, it was Bethany. It is mind-boggling to me. It really is.
The stupidity? Yeah, it's shocking.
It is. Everybody wants a conspiracy, Tony. Everybody wants a conspiracy. I just saw actually somebody sent it to me, because I pretty much stay within my own platform and in my own lane. But, you know, the big thing going around right now is that I'm Papa Roger. That went around a year ago.
You are Papa Roger. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
that seems reasonable.
It's on fire right now. I really just kind of want to post but that meme that somebody actually made of me being Papa Roger. I just want to put that up and just say, yeah, it's me.
You should just start an account and just start saying weird things out of it
Who has time for that, Tony?
Exactly.
Other than to kill us.
Let me ask you this one more question, and this is one I've been kind of pondering for a little bit, and I think you have too. Had this gone to trial, how confident are you that he would have been convicted? I mean, it came down to the DNA, I think, at the end of the day. That was the strongest piece of evidence. Obviously, you have circumstantial things. You have them buying the products way earlier, the weapon way, way, way back. But how strong of a case do you think this would have been had it gone to trial, considering, you know, juries aren't that hard. You just need one to say, I don't think it's him.
I think it was a very, very strong case based on those three pieces, right? It's always been based on the car, you know, leaving the scene, that the Willanta video, all mm-hmm. the video footage combined with the cell information, including the fact that he turned his off, mm-hmm. combined with the information from, you know, them finding him with gloves on, digging around, you know, trying to make sure his DNA wasn't found anywhere. Putting his organic trash into another trash can, and, you know, all of that. I mean, that just showed consciousness of guilt, combined with all the things they did find, which were the nitrile gloves, the kit bag he had a gun, he had a lot of stuff that was, that people don't normally have that aren't going to commit crimes. The other search for a replacement K-bar knife. And then you add that coup de grace, which was that DNA. I think the jury would have gotten it right. But I tell you, with these crazy sleuths that are always trying to stir up, just nonsense, you just never know if that would have caught fire in some way, and if a juror could have been tainted like what we saw in Karen Reed.
The possibilities are always there, and that's the scary part about the Koberger case. I am happy now that it has ended where it has, because we do know the right person is behind bars, thankfully.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.